It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Into the weekend, we thrust ourselves for a beautiful Friday morning, a Friday football morning, as we launch into another weekend, an important weekend of football. Then again, just about every day, depending on your fandom and the teams that you follow, just about every weekend is an important football weekend, whether you're talking about the high school level, the college level, the pro level. Weekends in the autumn were made for football, even in pandemic times, which is why it's good to have the outstanding sport of the gridiron game. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. So glad to have you alongside for a Friday edition as we launch into the weekend. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you alongside. And as we prepare to discuss some of the important matchups of the weekend at all levels, high school, college, and pro, to set the lineup for you, the table for you, for today, coming up in a little bit, obviously we'll have our Whataburger top five high school football matchups of the weekend. We'll visit with Jeff Abels, head coach of the Bowie Bulldogs, Bowie and Aikens tonight, which you're going to hear on 105.3 The Bat. So we'll have that. In fact, on all of our stations, we have activity, even with Lake Travis having to sit one out this week and not be able to play against Del Valle because of COVID issues over there. We do have in its place tonight here on the Horn, Austin High in action against Sam Marcus. So we'll have that for you. And then, of course, on 101.9 and AM 1260, we will bring you Vandegrift's matchup with Cedar Ridge. So we've got all that. Snoop Daniel, our producer for this program, launches Flex ATX, the pregame show at 6:30. Launch is a proper way to describe it, I would think.
Yeah.
With the things you do. Last night, by the way, well, first of all, let me finish, of course, with the lineup. My broadcast partner, co-host, the proud graduate of Florence High School and former All-District offensive lineman of the Florence Buffaloes, and, of course, you know him well for his insider work at Horns 24/7, Jeff Howe here, who is, you know, pumped up about maybe the Buffaloes' opportunities tonight against Riesel.
If they're going to get one, this is it, right?
I think you're right. I think this is the one to do that. You're usually grinding and blowing and going on a Thursday night, so I don't know. Did you have any opportunity at all to see any of the game between Weiss and Hendrickson last night?
I was following some of the tweets from that Flex ATX Twitter account.
Yep.
But other than that, no, not really.
Well, The reason why we were able to follow that so well is because Snoop was at the game, so much so that late in the contest, Hendrickson scores with 52 seconds left to go up 49-42. And I'm sitting there, I'm watching it with a girlfriend. So Linda and I are sitting there, and I said, whoa, stop. I said, isn't that Snoop? And he looked, and there he is, standing behind the end zone.
Yep.
With his Flex ATX cam, shooting away. So
shooting and tweeting.
And tweeting.
It's so possible.
That's why I said blowing and going, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he was all about that. So that was it. And it was a crazy game that was last night. It looked like, and I believe at one point, correct me if I'm wrong, Snoop, Hendrickson had a 21-point lead in the third quarter.
Yeah. Going into the half, it was 28-7.
Yeah. It looked like they were about to put the thing on ice, up 42-35, driving there inside the 10-yard line. They get the six they were. about midway fourth quarter, and they have a pick six brought back, I think, 98 yards for a touchdown.
C.J. Meeks.
Brings it all the way back. So now it's 42-all. They kick off. Hendrickson comes right back down the field. They score again. This time they do get it across, and they score.
Tulane commit Jaden Williams.
Scores with 52 seconds left. That's when I saw Snoop shooting the video there. So they're up, 49-42, 52 seconds left. Weiss returns the kickoff to midfield and manages the clock very well.
Yeah, number 21. Oh, my gosh. I'm trying to shout them all out. Sorry.
Well, the guy you need to shout out really for Weiss one of them is the quarterback.
Oh, yeah, D.R. Bradfield.
Because he hits a touchdown pass.
Kalen Rogers.
Yeah, and give credit to Steve Van Meter. Said, look, we're rolling. Let's go ahead and go for two with 7 seconds left.
They were huffing and puffing so hard, I don't think they could have played overtime.
Yeah, so they go for two, and Bradfield rolls left, and it looks like he's going to get the pylon, but he had the ball kind of holding out. I think he was getting ready to try to extend it, and it got knocked from his grasp in the end zone.
Daniel Aiden Keith with the strip.
And Hendrickson recovers, and they hold on for a 49-48 victory. So, incredible game. Incredible game last night. So, anyway, that's where Snoop was hanging out last night. So, so we've got those things coming up. Obviously, we'll have the football notes from the UT Variety coming with Jeff at the bottom of the hour. So, we have that and more of that coming up in the 11 o'clock hour as well. So we have that. And then we can even look at the NFL. Did you see any of Falcons, Panthers last night?
A very, very small portion of it. That game didn't do a whole lot for me.
Yeah, yeah, okay. There was a story today. All right, we're all well aware if you saw what happened last weekend with the Falcons and the Lions, where Todd Gurley runs to the goal line. He's told, don't score a touchdown. They even had the audio of the thing of that where Matt Ryan is saying, don't score. And he falls into the end zone. So he scores. And then the Lions come down and they score and they win the game. They almost had kind of a similar thing last night. Not with the scoring deal, but Gurley, when he knew they were trying to run the clock out, he ran out of bounds and it saved Carolina a timeout. But it ended up not mattering because the Panthers threw an interception and they wind up the Falcons getting only their second win of the season. So there's also just an awfully vicious hit on Teddy Bridgewater last night. And I think there was an ejection and there may be some, I would say some disciplinary action, but it didn't happen with the Cowboys.
If John Bostic didn't get suspended, then we're just not suspending for
right.
for. Just dirty, cheap hits on quarterbacks anymore.
Yeah, okay. So, anyway, so now we go into the weekend, and what college game, other than the one you've had to dial in all your energies and focus on and obviously preparing for Texas and Oklahoma State, what college football game has you most intrigued this weekend?
Clemson Boston College has me intrigued now, just
really?
Because we get to see DJ Uiagalelei for a whole game with Trevor Lawrence's positive COVID test.
By the way, that was nice of you to call into Bucky and Aaron and try to straighten them out on the pronunciation.
Once you Craig, you can attest this. Once you get it, it just kind of rolls off the tongue.
You're right. Once you have it, I always remember when Slobodan Živojinović first appeared on the scene for Wimbledon. Like in the 80s, I guess it was, and people were having trouble with it. And our good friend Hugh Lewis, who did the show with us when we were on the other station, when he was anchoring sports locally for KVU, he was said, so-and-so lost to a Hungarian opponent. Because he was from Hungary, Slobodan Živojinović. So yeah, there were people that had trouble with Tua Tagovailoa's name for a little while, but once you get used to it and you start hearing it, then it rolls off the tongue easy.
Yeah. So DJ Uiagalelei has got me intrigued. There's a couple of games in our Supreme Lending Pick'em contest, which we're going to pick in the 11 o'clock hour. Auburn LSU is one I'll keep my eye on just because that Auburn program. I mean, we know about the unrest at Texas, and we'll get into that. But Auburn's one of those programs where it seems like Gus Malzahn is on a perpetual hot seat. So we'll see what happens with that game tomorrow. quite frankly, Cincinnati-Memphis.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that's. Is that the only game we've got this weekend against with two ranked teams playing each other?
Might be. I mean, let me look at it and see. Somebody on the Specs text line said, unless you breathe on Tom Brady, then it's 15 yards and an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty.
Give him COVID.
Right. it did make me think of when we were talking about name pronunciations. You know, we learned Amen Ombang Bamiga last year,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I was asking Dave Hunziker, voice of the Cowboys, the other day about the pronunciation of Samuela Tuihalamaka. But he said, oh, you got that. You nailed that. You know, of course, he's like in an either or as the backup to Tyler Lacey on the defensive front. So probably won't be able to say his name during the course unless they're spelling him out at some point. I don't know. So we'll see.
Actually, I thought Memphis was ranked. Memphis is not ranked. So, Craig, we don't have a top 25 matchup
of ranked
Ohio State, Penn State.
There you go.
That doesn't do a whole lot for me.
Doesn't move the meter for you because of Penn State's loss to Indiana.
Yeah.
Because if Penn State had won.
But we talked about Penn State before the year. Like, losing Micah Parsons, I didn't think Penn State was a top 10 team to begin with.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's one of those deals. But, no, I mean, look, but the game that we're all paying attention to because, quite frankly, this is a big weekend for this program.
Sure it is.
Is that game in Stillwater tomorrow at 3 o'clock?
Yep. And it is, that is important. Phil texting in saying, Craig, true or fake news, Herman made remarks about Ewers that his family took exception to, thus he decommitted. I heard
somebody say something about that yesterday.
Trey
mentioned it on Shirts and Skins yesterday when he called in to do their picks. And I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm not knocking Trey's reporting or his sourcing. I'm just saying, you know, Mike Roach would know better than a lot of people what's said and what's not said. Mike said he hasn't heard that.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying it didn't happen or it's not true, but
yeah,
Phil, not something we have been able to confirm at this point.
Phil, I would just say this. That right now, with emotions being the way they are for a lot of fans and some media, the way that the program is covered, there will be things that will fly out there that are that may wind up being true but exaggerated. There may be things that had some truth in it, and there may be some things that have absolutely no truth at all. So it always happens when a program, and I'm not just talking about the program here, I'm saying a program gets under the microscope when things are not going well.
Yeah, and my take on it, Craig, in the grand scheme of things, in the big picture, to me it doesn't really matter because even before Quinn Ewers decommitted, there were enough, I guess, cracks in the dam, if you will, for the Tom Herman era that got him in the position that he's in going into this weekend before the Ewers stuff even happened. So regardless of what was said, what wasn't said, look, I don't need to come out and say it. Everybody knows the deal. Texas needs to win a football game this weekend.
It's important. And it was said last weekend coming out of the open date and coming off the loss to Oklahoma. But I think by and large, I think folks expected Texas to take care of the business, and they did last weekend. This is a different issue going on the road, playing the number 6 team in the country with a very stout defense, as we've chronicled during the course of the week. So this is a challenge of a different sort.
Yeah, and I'll just say this, Craig, because I know, look, we get texts on it all the time on this show, and I deal with it hourly by the minute at Horns 24/7 on the flagship message board. This is a situation where when you talk about the trajectory of the program, that right now in this moment, people want definitive answers for what's going to happen, what could happen, what should happen, and there are no definitive answers to give right now.
Right.
There is nothing that you can say unequivocally with 100% certainty that A, B, or C will happen.
Right.
And I think for a lot of people that this is a fan base that's been dealing with uncertainty for, you know, a decade now for the most part. So it's just one of those things where you're just going to have to let things play out, let them be what they will be, and it starts with a game that, quite frankly, bottom line, Craig, one thing you can definitively say, if Texas loses tomorrow in Stillwater, your chances,
things aren't getting easier.
Your chances of making it to Arlington to even have a chance to win the Big 12 championship are probably done at that point.
Yeah, I think so. Well,
I don't think it's mathematically done.
Right.
But
all the, I mean,
for all intents and purposes, it's done.
But you can say the same thing about Oklahoma. You can say the same thing about TCU. You can say the same thing about West Virginia. I mean, there are teams already that have logged a couple of conference losses that cannot afford to have another conference loss.
Yeah.
And you're right, and they fit right in. And ask me, so Craig, how was your visit yesterday out to the Titanic? I've never heard of pluckers being called the Titanic before. I get where you're going with that. When we do Longhorn Weekly with Tom Herman, it's at Pluckers. We do it there. And we have the plexiglass up, and we're distanced and all that other kind of stuff.
Looked like you had a nice big Pluckers lemonade in there.
Always do. Always do. They're nice enough to read. They ask me what is my beverage of choice, and I go out there, and I really like their lemonade. Always have. So I was just like, can we go lemonade? And so I don't even ask for it anymore. I get there, and boom, they bring it out.
It's because you're a Hall of Famer. You get that.
No, it's because they know I drink lemonade. It's because they know that's what I drink.
Come on,
lemonade.
Craig. Don't be modest, Craig.
Oh, yeah, the lemonade makes all the difference. So is that we did have a good visit with Coleman Hutzler.
I thought that, actually, yeah. And I like the assistant coach interviews on Longhorn Weekly. Honestly, during the show, that's the must-listen part for me, because you get into it with the assistant coaches. I want to know from Coleman Hutzler, how's David Benda doing? How's mm-hmm. Jalen Ford doing? And Jaden Hullaby? And guys that this program is going to need to be productive players in the near future. Mm-hmm. I want to know how those guys are making progress.
And he did. He talked about all those guys, as well as Jawan Mitchell, obviously, and DeMarvian Overshow. So, anyway. So, there you are. All right. Coming up, we'll have our Whataburger Top 5, which is our top five high school football matchups of the weekend. And we'll visit with Jeff Abels, head coach of the Bowie Bulldogs. We'll do that. We have our inconceivable moment this hour as well, and a lot of football still to discuss.
Hey, I've got a story in Inconceivable that happened.
You get to be the leadoff man. Whenever you have one, I like leading off with you on that.
It happened at my humble abode last night, and I'm going to open it up to the Specs text line. It is the day before Halloween, and we're talking about kind of things that scare you / gross you out. Want to throw this out there to the listening audience.
Okay. All right. Since it's a deal out of your house, and since it's a Halloween thing, I'm going to I've got like one or two little Halloween things. I'm going to get them out of the way and then clear the deck for you.
Okay.
On that, when you do that.
Awesome.
I can't wait to hear this. This will be good. All right. We've still got a lot of football talk, obviously, we'll get to, and we'll do that when we continue with Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, and streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the match.
He did the monster match.
The monster match.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the match.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the match.
He did the monster match. From my laboratory in the castle.
This song has a rarity about it. It charted twice at number one. Once when it was originally released in 1965, and then when it was redone in 1973. The Monster Mash. Bobby Boris Pickett. Anyway, you remember this song?
Is it a bad thing to say that I find this song kind of spare?
Well, it's dated. It's definitely a promo.
Doesn't really age well.
The guest included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. Now, you stop and think about that. For Dracula had a son. Well, anyway, we're going to worry about that. So we go back to our regular conversations, and that is football. And, of course, at this time, each week on Friday, we take the opportunity to visit with the head coach of the Bowie Bulldogs, Jeff Abels, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Door. Check him out online at cedarparkgaragedoors.com. The Bulldogs will host Aikens tonight at Burger Stadium. Coach, we appreciate the time. Good morning to you. And you feel like your guys are back in a rhythm now and ready to go after not being able to play on back and then jumping back into it with a big win?
Good morning. Yes, Craig. It seems like a month ago that we played Del Valley. But, you know, when you have that open week, you can get a lot of things done and focus on fundamentals, which we did. And I think the guys are ready to go.
I remember one thing you said when we talked about this last week. You said we've got to do two things here. We've got to focus on some fundamentals and clean up some things, and we've got some guys who are banged up a little bit, some bumps and bruises. Did the unplanned open date also kind of help in that department in getting guys healthy?
No doubt. So we got some guys back, and then of course when you don't play, you know, you don't have that risk of getting somebody else hurt, and that also is helpful. And so we're at full strength pretty much, with the exception of a few guys that are out for the season. So it was a good week for us. Got some rest. We were able to work on our grades and academics, and had some really good practices.
Hey, Coach, I caught your outstanding receiver, Jason Gaines, on Under the Lights with Rick Epstein and Jeff Power here on the Horn Wednesday night. And you know, I heard him saying kind of the message just amongst the players was, hey, don't take Akins lightly. They're going to come out and give you their best shot. They feel like, you know, Akins always tries to play their best against Bowie. Do you like when you hear your kids talking about having that sense of urgency, don't take this opponent lightly, and make sure you're raring and ready to go for this one?
I do, and I like hearing that every week because it's the truth. You know, everybody has good players, and if you don't show up and play hard each week, then you're going to be disappointed.
Toward that end, what are the things about Akins that really strike you when you look at him, Coach?
They're athletic. They have some big kids as well that can move you off the ball, and they're aggressive on defense. So they're a good football team and have some really good athletes and good players. And, you know, like you guys were referring, they're right down the street from us, and a lot of our kids know their kids and have gone to middle school with them, or they know them. And so, you know, it's a good friendly rivalry, and I think it's going to be a great night for football for it.
Coach, I know we talk about him a lot, but your quarterback, Diego Tello, when you've gotten to break down the film and watch him over the last few weeks, what's impressed you just about the week-to-week improvement that he's made?
Well, he knows our offense, and he knows what to do with the football. He's a smart player. He studies the game, and he's doing a great job of running our offense and executing it. So he's a smart guy. He's a team player. He's one of those guys that leads by example, and he's doing a fabulous job for us. And I'm glad we have him now and going to have him back again next year.
Coach, our own Snoop Daniel with a question for Coach Abel. Snoop?
You know, Coach, I'm such a big fan of your program, and I know that we see Daniel Bright play a lot, and he's a two-sport star. I know he plays baseball as well, but it really seems like he's taken more to football of late. Can you kind of talk about his progression as a football player for you?
You know, Thanio, he is a good athlete, Snoop. I agree with you there. And you know what? We like that with our kids. We want them to play other sports and do as much as you can when you're in high school. Be a multi-sport athlete. And Thanio is one of those guys. He's a really good baseball player. You know, he was kind of an offensive guy until last year, and we put him in at free safety and started him there, and I think he started liking that, and he's kind of gone all the way to the defensive side, and we could still spot play him a little bit if we need him offensively, but he's one of those guys that's a good athlete, and so you want those good athletes on the field wherever they may be, on the special teams, offense, defense, but yeah, you're right. He's a really good baseball player. And also a good football player. And we have several of those young men that do multiple sports. And, again, we like that.
Yeah, like Anthony Simmons. And just one more question, Coach. I wanted to ask you about I know, like, Diego Tello is doing well, but I know you like to run Grayson Foradori out there when you can. Can you talk a little bit about number five?
Yeah, Grayson is doing a great job for us. He's, you know, he's ready to go at quarterback with Diego. He's also playing our Tulsa spot, as you mentioned, and tight end. He's just a good athlete that when you can put him in different places, he's smart. He knows the offense. You can put him in different places, and he can help you in various positions. So as many type guys we have like that, we're going to utilize them and use them.
It is Bowie against Akins tonight. You'll hear it on 105.3 The Bat with Dee Hansen and Steve Foster on the call this evening from Burger. Jeff, as always, great to visit with you. I appreciate you taking the time. Best of luck tonight, and we'll look forward to visiting next week.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate you guys. Thank you.
You bet.
Thanks, Coach.
That's Jeff Abels, head coach of the Bowie Bulldog. Every game important in this district, certainly in talking about jockeying for, let's be honest, really two available playoff spots,
right?
Because we know the two that are going to be, you know, at or near the top of the district fighting and probably going to wind up with two of those spots, those, of course, being Lake Travis and Westlake, which, by the way, brings us to our Whataburger Top 5.
Now, it's time for the Whataburger Top 5.
Okay, prepare to receive.
Today's edition.
Here we go.
Top 5 matchups of the week.
Now, it's not often that we have a matchup in the top 5 that involves Westlake, other than when they play Lake Travis or a huge, high-profile non-district game or a playoff game. Let's just be honest about that because Westlake has been pretty dominant on this. However, tonight's matchup with Hayes does have some intrigue to it. Westlake is coming off the unplanned open date on the schedule. They had to go through all kinds of protocols. We heard from Todd Dodge on Wednesday about his entire team being tested for COVID. At the time, Coach Dodge said he didn't know of any other program in the state of Texas that had to go through that before being cleared just to practice. That was due to some Travis County health issues, health directives. So I checked with guys like Greg Tepper and a couple other guys across the state. They had not heard of that happening anywhere else either. So it's been a different sort of protocols in addition to the practice that Westlake goes on. Top of that, Hayes knows an opportunity with its unusual offense could provide a surprise or two for certain. And on top of that, happy birthday, Coach Les Goad. Today's his birthday. And for your present, you get Westlake tonight, but they're playing at Schaap Stadium.
Real quick, Craig, in that district, Snoop, we talked about it a little bit, I think, last week. Bowie and Hayes play at the end of the last
end
game
of
the regular season. That very well could be losers, winners in, losers out.
Not only that, it could wind up being the swing thing that determines whether Westlake goes Division One or Division Two.
Yep.
If Austin High has clinched a playoff spot by then. Because if they're in, then if it comes down to that, and there's a lot of football to be played between now and then, but if it comes down to that, in that final week between Bowie and Hayes, if Bowie wins, they would be in the Division I bracket with Lake Travis, and Westlake would be in D2 like they were last year, and defending their 6A Division II state championship. If Hayes and Austin High both get in, that combination, because I said way on back, either Bowie or Del Valle would have to get in, in order to keep Westlake in the Division II bracket. Well, it's trending more and more that Del Valle may not make it. They've had, obviously, some issues. They're having to deal with the virus, and they've already lost to Bowie. So it looks like it's going to head toward that Bowie-Hayes game, no matter what happens tonight at Schaap Stadium. So that's number 5 on the list. Number 4, we go to 26-6A. How about a little Saturday afternoon action for you?
I can dig it.
Westwood playing at Vista Ridge. This is because this is game 2 of 3 games and technically 11 days on the calendar for the Warriors, for head coach Anthony Wood. They come off the Monday night win over Stony Point. Now they go to Gupton to take on Vista Ridge tomorrow afternoon. Vista had bounced back from the loss to Vandergrift with their win over Cedar Ridge, and now they get ready. It's homecoming, by the way, for Vista. So that's tomorrow afternoon, an important matchup in 26-6A. Number 3, we go to District 12, 5A, Division 1, Lehman and Johnson from Buda. Lehman, it reminds me of that scene in The Princess Bride where Inigo Montoya keeps fighting back after he got stabbed, and Christopher Guest is looking at him going, "My heavens, are you still trying to win?" And they are. And they've already won, and they got a big game against Johnson. If they win, they stay in the thick of the fight for a playoff spot.
And city bragging rights.
Yes, there's some involved there as well. So, big game tonight, obviously, for there. Number two, how about Elgin and Glenn? Elgin's still trying to get off the schneid. Glenn, which had a week had a win last week, now knows it needs to keep winning and have an opportunity to stay in the thick of the playoff fight in 13-5A Division II.
They beat Connolly, but it was not pretty.
Exactly.
They got things to clean up.
Yeah, so they'll try to do that on the road tonight. And the number one matchup of the week. Hey, it was the number one road trip yesterday, and it's the number one matchup overall. It's Hearn and Thorndale. Thorndale has a shot at a district title. Hearn is unbeaten. They're 6-0. And they've got an outstanding quarterback. We're actually profiling him on the television show tonight is my choice on the Ford Player of the Week watch list. And, you know, so that and really the Bulldogs are going to have to do a good job stopping him. Micah Smith is the young man's name. Through six games, he's passed for 1,180 yards, 13 touchdowns, run for 363 yards, and scored six more touchdowns going into this game. He's a weapon, and Thorndale knows it. So they've got their hands full there with that on the road playing at an unbeaten Hearn team. So there it is, our Whataburger top five matchups of the week. On we go to our football notes portion of the program presented by Cedar Park Overhead Door. Check them out online at cedarparkgaragedoors.com.
Let's do some matchups, Craig, to watch in tomorrow's game between Texas and Oklahoma State. We'll start with the big one. I think this could really be the one that if you look at who wins this game, who loses this game, this is probably the matchup you can go back to. It's the Texas cornerbacks against Tylan Wallace.
Yep.
Now, we know Rod Babers has done a great job giving it to you on the Triple Option, also the Longhorn Blitz podcast this week, of the numbers about the Texas cornerbacks this year in Big 12 play. Opposing quarterbacks are completing 64% of their passes when targeting Texas corners. Texas corners, once every five plays when you target a Texas corner, it's either an explosive passing play, that's a play that goes for 15 or more yards, or teams are drawing a DPI. Texas corners also making a play on the ball, either a PBU or an interception, once every 11 targets. So the corners have really, really struggled. And Craig, we talked about it a lot this week. The challenge for Chris Ash is going to be, yes, you do have to help those corners. But because Oklahoma State's run game is so good, you cannot let them run into a light box all day. So you're going to have to pick spots when you play man coverage. And Tylan Wallace in Big 12 play, Craig, 63.6% of his yards and 60% of his receptions have come on explosive passing plays. This is just Tylan Wallace on explosive plays in Big 12 play, which, again, it's a reception that goes for 15 or more yards. He's got six, totaling 192 yards and two touchdowns, just on explosive plays in conference play. So we've seen this Oklahoma State offense. You know, again, we heard from Dave Huntsiger earlier this week. They really haven't had to kind of uncork the explosiveness, if you will, because Mike Gundy really trusts his defense and likes the way they're winning football games. But that's really the ace up their sleeve. If they need to be explosive, if they need to air it out, they can. And number two is going to get his. You just have to make sure he just doesn't go wild like he did in Stillwater 2 years ago, going for over 200 yards and a couple scores.
Well, and that was the other thing Chris Ash talked about the other day, is that in that coverage, when the corners are on him, if he or, you know, either of the receivers, or even Dylan Stoner inside, any of those guys are making catches, got to get him to the ground quickly. Can't let it turn into a gigantic play. And if it's something down the boundary, you got to do your best to try to deflect to keep it from being caught. But if it is caught, you definitely need to make the tackle right then and not let it get into the end zone.
Dylan Stoner, was Mike Gundy throwing Dylan Stoner passes during his Oklahoma State career? It seems like he's been there.
It's another one of those forever. Been there forever guys.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Another matchup I like, Craig, number two, and we usually do four matchups to watch.
Yep.
Sam Ellinger against the Oklahoma State safeties. Now, look, given the issues Texas has had getting off press coverage this year, I'm counting on this being a game, Craig, where Rodarius Williams, as good as he is, basically just shutting down one side of the field. So that basically he's going to take away a half, a third of the field on every snap. I think he's that good. He's what Justin Gilbert was to that defense in 2012-2013. That's what Rodarius Williams is to this Oklahoma State defense. You're going to have to take shots if you're Texas. And I'll get to the other part of that matchup here in just a second. But how good has Oklahoma State been at minimizing big plays of college teams, of FBS teams that have played at least four games this season? The Oklahoma State defense, number one in the country in plays of the fewest plays of 10 yards or more allowed, 44, and they've given up the fewest 20-yard gains. They've only given up nine in four games. So this is a defense, Craig, and we talked about it. When Mike Gundy's got a veteran defense, they usually have a pretty good identity, and they're usually pretty good on the back end. And whether you're talking about Tanner McAllister, Colby Harvell-Pill, they're really, really good at those safety positions. So, and we've seen Sam Ehlinger at times this year, Craig. When he's been good, he's looking off the safety. He's creating extra, space for his receivers. He's making the window open. So Sam, you can pick a quarterback matchup, and we'll get to the Oklahoma State matchup here in just a second. You can pick a quarterback matchup, go any way you want. But to me, it's Sam Ehlinger trying to manipulate a really good group of safeties for Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I think, you know, whether you're talking about Trey Sterling or Colby Harvell-Peel, it's two guys you got to try to find a way to work, like you said, with what Rodarius Williams is going to take away on the corner.
The flip side, our third matchup, Craig, it's the Texas linebackers and Spurs against Spencer Sanders. Just because of the run threat he poses, and Chris Ash mentioned this earlier this week, one thing he doesn't like, and he said it's on those guys at the second level to prevent this, namely that spur position. This is where they want more production out of that spot. He feels like there are too many perimeter runs to the field side that are popping for big yardage. He wants those cut down, and now it's already a challenge enough to deal with Chuba Hubbard. And Texas, Craig, did a really good job against him last year in the game in Austin. You say, well, Jeff, he got 121 yards. Yeah, but he needed 37 carries to get there. It was his season low in terms of yards per carry for a game.
There was a lot of stuff in between the 20s. And didn't hurt him with big gash. Like you said, they made him really grind for it.
But who did gash him last year, Craig? It was Spencer Sanders going 18 for 109 last year.
Yep.
So that's on that group at second level. DeMarvian Overshone, Juwan Mitchell, Chris Adamora. Those three guys in particular, we talked about it. There were going to be some growing pains, specifically with Overshone and Adamora switching positions. Adamora going from safety to spur. Overshone going from safety to well linebacker. That group collectively at the second level, coming off of their best game of the season against Baylor, if they can carry it over, you're going to give yourself a chance. Otherwise, Max Duggan had a whole lot of success running the football. Even though he's not a run threat, Spencer Rattler had a lot of success running the football. So can Texas contain the quarterback run game? They've got to do that at the second level. And I talked about Texas needing explosive Craig. The fourth matchup, I've got the Texas offensive line against Calvin Bundage. And you say, well, Jeff, why would a backup linebacker technically be a matchup? Because Calvin Bundage, Craig, was a productive guy earlier in his career. Now he's become more of almost like a situational pass rush guy for them. He's leading them with 3.5 sacks. And yes, Oklahoma State, because they've got Rodarius Williams locking down a third to a half of one side of the field whenever he's on the field, whenever you want to throw the football. On top of the fact that this is a really good safety group for Oklahoma State, that means they can play a ton of games up front. And until this Texas offensive line shows that they can consistently handle the twists and the stunts and the pass rush games, people are going to play up front. Did a pretty good job against Baylor. I don't remember Baylor playing a ton of games, but they're going to see a whole lot of what Oklahoma did and what they saw pretty much from the West Virginia game on last year. They're going to see that on Saturday. Can they hold up long enough? And yes, the tight ends and the running backs are a really big part of that. Can they give Sam Ehlinger enough time to try to manipulate those safeties to where you can hit the shots down the field that you're going to need to hit to win this ballgame?
And I'll tell you, Calvin Bundage, like you said, he's technically listed as the backup to Amen Obambamiga, but he's on the field an awful lot. In fact, we have him in our mentioning him in our broadcast, open to the entire broadcast tomorrow, him and Rodarius Williams. So he's impactful. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
He's probably the most impactful guy I've seen listed as number two on a depth chart.
Right.
When you think about that.
Yeah.
All right. So there's some football notes from Jeff this hour.
By the way,
more
Craig,
next hour.
Sorry, Oklahoma State with Calvin Bundage is 3.5 sacks. Oklahoma State tied for second in the conference in total sacks with 15, but they are number one in the league, averaging about 3.75 sacks per game.
Mm-hmm. So something to keep in mind there. All right. Up next, you might say it's a Halloween edition of the Inconceivable. Jeff has something that hits kind of close to home there in his own household. We've got a couple other notes on that as well as we continue with Light the Tower here on The Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, and streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
This Sunday night, the
Inconceivable! 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 Inconceivable!
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Ah, but inconceivable can mean so many things on a Halloween weekend. First of all, we'll start outside the realm of holiday of Halloween. I've been telling you quite a bit, Jeff, of late about, you know, weird airline stories and things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you can go on the flight to nowhere, you know, go around, just do laps around Australia for 400. Yeah. Still there for you if you want it there, Jeff. You know, it's there.
It's going to be a hard pass for me, Greg.
Okay, did the follow-up about the flight to somewhere, you know, to that island where you could go there, that was also Australia. That had a little more interest for you, right? It was the flight to somewhere?
At least, yeah, at least it's going somewhere.
Okay, all right. Well, how about this flight? How would you like to say you went on the world's longest airline flight?
That sounds like a terrible idea. I'd rather do the thing around Australia. What the hell is this?
Well, last week, there was the return of the world's longest flight from Singapore to New York to JFK. But now there's another. If you think that's bad, going from Singapore to JFK, nonstop, longest flight, here's one to stop it. Here's a transatlantic flight from Montreal to Athens. And you say, well, that's not as long as Singapore to New York. It's not. But it's the longest. It's 8 hours and 32 minutes. It's the longest flight performed in a narrow-body Airbus plane. In other words, one aisle. It's not like a big jet, you know, where you have the two seats on the windows and then five in the middle. You have two aisles. You've been on those big planes before. This is one where you got one aisle. One aisle, and you got three seats on one side and three on the other.
I think there are folks in the airline industry, Craig, that as this quarantine continues and, you know, various parts of the world are in various forms of lockdown.
Yeah.
I think the airline industry as a whole just needs to take a step outside, take a deep breath, get some fresh air, because you have not scraped the bottom of the barrel. You have broken through it in terms of your ideas to try to get people excited about getting on an airplane.
Okay. So, I mean, you could do it. It's the longest flight with a single aisle plane. How uncomfortable must that be?
I would rather get with Brad Kellner and take a bus trip to El Paso than do that.
It's about the same length.
I would rather do the BK El Paso bus trip.
Wow.
Than do that.
Okay.
Ooh. It'd be about the same, would it not?
Yeah, it would be about the same area, something like that, in the neighborhood of 8 hours or so. Do you hit the snooze button much when you in the morning?
Unfortunately.
Do you realize that you probably hit the snooze button more in the wintertime than any other time of year?
That makes sense. I think it's cold. It's colder. You want to hibernate.
Well, it's interesting you say that because the people are trying to get, you know, consistent sleep schedules and things like that. Alex Savvy, what a name. He's a certified sleep science coach. How'd you like to have that job? He says the reason...
Sounds like a shady character in like a Judy Blume book or something.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? There's a couple of reasons for this about why you hit the snooze button more in the winter. Is that you're changing melatonin production is why you struggle to get out of bed when the seasons change. I say this because we turn the clocks back, you know, tomorrow night. So this is, by the way, from the same group that authors the story, how often you should really be changing your sheets.
I wash my sheets once a week. That's good. Should I be doing it more often?
I don't know. I didn't look at that story. There's another reason, by the way, that Mr. Savvy says this can result in a problem, makes it hard to get out of bed. Seasonal affective disorder. Also known as SAD. Seasonal affective disorder. SAD can be caused by higher levels of melatonin and decreased serotonin secretion, both of which are related to lack of sunlight. This is darker, more in the winter, right? So if you're hitting the snooze button more in the winter...
Basically, if you want to be lazy and sleep in, there's a medical condition for that now?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much.
I got you.
Yeah.
We'll just cut right through it, Craig. Just cut right to the chase.
Yeah. It could be that. I remember when we did the music survey, I was trying to remember who were the ones that you said were overrated?
What was my overrated? U2.
U2, okay. Yeah. All right. I think it was Trey Elling who said overrated was Bob Dylan, which I think Bob Dylan was a great singer-songwriter. Well, Bob Dylan, outside of his protest songs, wrote a song in 1971 called Lay Lady Lay. It was a big hit for him. And This sounds like it's in a different key. Is this? Hopefully, this is Bob Dylan doing it and not somebody else. Snoop, did you get Bob Dylan there? That's not Bob Dylan. That's not the Bob Dylan version. Of the, all right. That's it. This is it right here. I remember this. All right. So this is a big hit for Bob Dylan in 1971. Okay. It was a big hit. Now, a lot of the protest people said it was a sellout for him, going commercials, the Nashville skyline was there, the album, all that kind of stuff. But it was a big hit. Well, a transcript of a 1971 conversation with Bob Dylan and his friend Tony Glover, who's now passed away, was reported for an Esquire article. This thing is going to go on auction, and it's supposed to fetch a lot of money. But do you know who this song is about?
No idea.
Barbara Streisand. Where did that come from, right? But, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So, there it is. Just a Bob Dylan moment there.
So, is somebody going to, you know, be the high bidder in an auction and then try to take that to Pawn Stars and you'll only be offered like $400 for it?
You wonder, you know, and... He said, and then Barbara Streisand was asked about it this week. And she said, I'm very flattered to find out that Bob Dylan wrote Lay Lady Lay for me. What I remember is getting flowers from him with a handwritten note asking me to sing a duet with him. But I just couldn't imagine it then. Guess what, Bob? I can imagine doing it now, she said. So there it is. Okay, to the Halloween stories. Jeff, your house.
Well, it's not really a Halloween story. It's just kind of more everybody's looking like what's scary or gross out, because that's what we're dealing with during Halloween. So last night, you know, I was working, and you know, my wife and my daughter, they did the pumpkin carving, got the jack o' lantern, and so Charlotte goes to bed, so it's kind of, you know, everybody's winding down, and I'm on the couch doing some work, and you know, Tamara's on her phone and just watching videos, and I keep hearing her just like go like ooh, and I'm like, what are you watching? And she's watching a video of somebody, I guess, at a dermatologist's office getting earwax pulled out of their ear.
Ew.
And she's enthralled by it. And I'm like, do you just sit here? You know, because my wife's in administration. She needs something to, you know, break the monotony. And
is this kind of like
some mindless entertainment?
A home version of Dr. Pimple Popper here at work?
My wife will scour YouTube, Facebook, etc., and find, like, pimple popping videos or... people pulling earwax out of their ears videos. I'm like, this is what you do. She's like, yeah, I love it. I'm like, you should have gotten into dermatology. I was like, you missed your calling in life. And I just wanted to know on the Specs text line, 337-3776, does anybody enjoy that, or does my wife just have some kind of sick obsession with that stuff? Or maybe it's both. I don't know, but her and I do not share a